Over the last 15 years, the landscape of stadiums, arenas, and entertainment venues have shifted dramatically, both in scale and in offerings. The customer experience is not what it was back in the 80s and 90s, where you would show up, have a couple vendors, hot dogs, hamburgers, and beers, and that was it. You're seeing more diverse food offerings, more options for entertainment, more seating options, not just your regular seats and your suites, but now you're seeing things like swimming pools and swim-up bars and all sorts of crazy things that have gone on. Now, with that and with the rise in the general capacity of these stadiums, crowd control has become a major issue. We've seen the proliferation of videos going around on X and Instagram and TikTok about fights in the stadiums, fights in the concourse, and entertainment options like these generally are going to bring out issues. So how are stadiums controlling that? How are stadiums getting ahead of it? And how are they able to manage these monstrous billion, $2 billion, $3 billion projects? I had Zach Klima on, founder and CEO of Wait Time, to talk more about this subject and specifically how they're able to help these clients manage. So now let's see if Crow knows.
You feel alive, let's hit the dance floor. Don't work too hard, my break a backbone. Return of the Mac, the king is back though. Corvette and cash, I never lack those. Shimmy, shimmy, y'all got the semi-four way. Don't step out the line like this a probate. You hit the line and try to locate. This for the time, got time for no.
Welcome everybody to another episode of the Crow Knows Podcast. I am joined by Zach Klima, founder and CEO of Wait Time. Zach, how you doing?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Excited to talk to you. I have had a long, maybe odd fascination and obsession with how stadiums come to be, how they're built, and then ultimately how they're actually run. I think it's one of the most unique and coolest ways that an entity can run, just from all the staffing that's required. How do you maintain all that? How do you build? How do you control everything and the flow? And so I thought you'd be an amazing person to talk to, given what you guys do at Wait Time. But just give us a quick, you know, 30 seconds, minute on your background and what you guys do at Wait Time.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, I live in Michigan. And, you know, right around 10 years ago, I was faced with a problem. I was at a Detroit Red Wings hockey game, and I leave my seat to go buy a beer, and I stand in this super long line. It's like maybe 40 people deep, and I inch towards the front. And then all of a sudden the horn goes off, the game winning goal goes off, and I missed everything. So as an avid sports fan, as you are, I am as well, you know, oddly obsessed with stadiums and arenas and the live event space. I thought to myself, I said, I would love to know how long this wait time was before I showed up at this line. And then number two, I want organizations to handle very seriously the flow of people, you know, manage crowds in real time. So that was really the inception of in my mind about, you know, that's how wait time started. And I thought to myself, okay, there is really nothing out there that does this. So, you know, all that time ago, you know, that's when wait time started. And now fast forward 10 years, we have the only patented what we call crowd management solution in the world, dealing and monitoring and reallocating crowds of people all in real time.
That's one of the best stories of, you know, everyone always says, if you want to start a business, find something that's a problem that you're facing and then right. Go fix it. And you did, which is cool. And so I want to start with just the general evolution of the stadium experience, right? It's so much different now than it was, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, where stadiums, you know, especially in the 80s and into the 90s, was pretty cookie cutter. They'd have a couple concession stands, and that was pretty much it. Wasn't a whole lot of technology. There wasn't a lot of anything. It was kind of just, you know, it was either a circle or it was open-ended. They had your concessions to get your beer, hot dogs, and that was pretty much it. Can you talk to us a little bit about what you guys have seen over the last 10 years in this evolution? Like, what stadiums are looking for now? Like, what are they prioritizing? And how did we get here to this incredible difference in these spectacles?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, when I started Wait Time almost a decade ago, people were still being sold on the benefits of Wi-Fi. I mean, it goes all the way back there. You know, connectivity, then there was 5G. And then there, you know, the progression of the network, you know, was a whole thing in itself. And so what I realized at that point in time was when we started Wait Time, we were probably 5 years ahead of the market, because if they were just getting on board with Wi-Fi, you know, the network enables technologies that are operational to succeed. So it was like kind of the cart before the horse. We needed the network side, you know, the innovation of connectivity to be there in order for wait time to be able to be a, you know, a plausible solution. So what we saw is the emergence of connectivity, and it needed to be a mandatory, right? Fans demand connectivity. They demand, you know, real time aspects of their experience, and it's all enabled by a network. So number one is the evolution of the network. And then over time, you know, we saw the emergence of mobile applications, which is crazy to even think about now, because mobile apps, you can't even get into the Miami Heat's arena, Kaseya Center, without their mobile app downloaded. There's no paper tickets, right? Yeah. But, you know, all that time ago, you know, mobile apps, I think there was, when we first started, there was 1% mobile adoption with the first venue that we launched in, which is crazy, right? And so it's really the evolution of the network was really number one. That was the biggest trend. Then it was the evolution of the mobile experience, which would be trend number two. And now what we're in now, you talk about being ahead of the market, is the emergence and the evolution of artificial intelligence, which is all enabled by everything that that precedes that. So that's really where we see the three kind of tranches of movements over the past almost decade now.
That's really interesting. So basically, because most of what we see as the, you know, consumers and people going to the stadiums is we see, you know, enhanced food offerings. We see, you know, in some cases we've got like pools, basically. I think it's in down in Miami, you've got all these different like crazy features. But what you're saying is that none of that is probably possible without the technology behind it and the networks and AI coming into play.
Correct. You know, there was a, it's funny because when you start something, you're hit with a heap of resistance all day, every day.
Yeah.
It's like, no. And then I say no. And the reason why is because of the mindset of progressive thinking, right? You know, if they said, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, if they have that mentality, then wait time, it wasn't a good fit for them, or is still not a good fit for them. They have to be progressive. They have to want to innovate their four-wall environment of their arena or stadium or sports venue in order to, you know, maximize revenue, increase safety, increase the guest experience. And so, you know, all those things have to be in alignment with the way that organization thinks to what you just talked about. Because before it was, we have five concessions, we sell hot dogs, hamburgers, and popcorn, enjoy the game, right? And so over the past 10 years, we see a lot of shift in decision makers coming in. It's not the old, dinosaurs that are in the decision making positions, you know, the people that have been a CTO for 27 years, right? They're in a position where if it ain't broke, don't fix it, smooth sailing. Mm-hmm. But then we saw this emergence of younger decision makers that came from the technology space to say, what is going on here? They were completely disruptive to say, we need to enable technology in order for us to increase our revenue. And so that's where we also see a big shift over the past years.
Yeah. It's funny thinking back to, you mentioned mobile tickets. I remember even when those started to come out, and most people were probably thinking, no, nobody will ever want a ticket on their phone. What happens if your phone died? What happens if, you know, all
that's
these
right.
things.
What if? Exactly.
Yeah. And then now you give somebody a ticket, a physical ticket, and they're like, I don't know what to do with this.
Right. Yeah. Do I frame it? Like, what do I do with it?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. So you mentioned the crowd control piece, which I think is really, really interesting, because I think one of the, obviously the easiest difference to see in these stadiums is just the size and capacity in these stadiums now. You know, going back to when most stadiums, the newer stadiums, were, you know, 50, maybe 55,000 people. Now, all of a sudden, you're seeing, you know, at the start of Jerry World and AT&T Stadium, a lot of these with SoFi, these are massive, massive, massive structures that are meant to house a significant number of people in different capacities. Now, not just football stadiums or not just, you know, NBA arenas, now with concerts and, you know, pro wrestling, all these things that are massive, you know, massive people and massive groups there. How sustainable is this from your side? Like, it seems like this is now a prerequisite to have AI enabled significant crowd control, because otherwise there's no way it can be done.
Yeah, correct. So, I mean, going back even before the pandemic, you know, we were preaching, okay, you need to monitor your crowds anonymously, right? So we're all anonymous with our AI. You need to monitor your crowds. You need to quantify your crowds, and you need to do it in real time because that affects your revenue strategies for sponsorship, for F&B, for operational efficiencies. That increases your guest experience because they're demanding, as I talked about earlier, fans are demanding, you know, right here, right now, what's going on. And so all of that, you know, we were preaching, the whole world shut down, you know, with the pandemic. And what did the pandemic say? The pandemic said, you need to monitor your crowds. You need to, create operational efficiencies around where, why, and how large crowds are forming. Everything that we were kind of preaching, kind of intersected post-pandemic with, okay, this is now becoming a prerequisite, as you talked about, because of safety, security, guest experience, all the things that we just talked about, because where people are in real time across your venue, you know, equals revenue and it equals security, because things are more likely to happen in the area of larger forming crowds, whether it be revenue or a security incident or whatever. So you need to know in real time proactively what's happening with your crowds. So to your point, it's becoming more of a norm. It's becoming more of a prerequisite. It's becoming specified into new arenas and and stadiums that are being designed by architects, because this becomes something that is not a nice to have, it's a need to have at this point in time. So that's where you see the progression going back from the network side all the way to present day. That's really where we see the shift in everything regarding technology and decision making.
It's interesting. You mentioned safety and security a couple of times. We've all seen the videos go around X or Instagram or TikTok of the fights and the concourses. Yeah. And it seems like it's, more prevalent now, but could just be, hey, we've got easier ways to see this kind of stuff. But it's interesting what you're saying, that the crowd being able to have this kind of technology and have visitors at the stadiums be able to see that there's long wait times, as if this is now almost more so a preventative measure for incidents, potentially, even more so than just, hey, we want to thin out crowds and make it easier.
Correct. And to your point, you're exactly right. So it's not about giving fans an information, because anyone in the world would agree that they want to know how long lines are at a sporting event. Yeah. I mean, that's like a no-brainer, right? I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And so, but at the same time that the fans are getting this information, operations that run that venue are also getting the same information, but just at a more detailed, granular level. So they're able to proactively respond to different things ahead of time. So, hey, wait time, alert me when there's 24 people in line, alert me when occupancy levels hit X, Y, or Z, alert me when groups are forming to, 60% capacity in certain areas. Before it becomes a problem, get alerted that this is growing, right? So you can get ahead of incidents like fights. You can get ahead of, food and beverage. You can get very smart with this to say, hey, we're going to actually send portable beer and concession hawkers to the back of long lines that we know are starting to form right now. So the people that inevitably will fall out of that line because the line is too long, there's going to be a magical hawker there that can transact you right there in the back of that line. So there's so many different things that you can do with it, but it's really operations focused on the back end, but also fan focus on the front end, and they have to work in sync with each other. So that's what we've spent the better half of a decade doing, is really innovating and proving out that the two systems don't live in silos. They live in sync with each other. So, the value can be maximized with each venue that we work with.
That's incredible. Most of us would just assume that somebody, just had a good, hardworking staff member that just saw the line and just went to the address of, hey, there's back end tech and those alerts, which makes complete sense. And for someone like me, I've never been in a fight in a public arena. I think it's a ridiculous thing to get to that point, but it is great for someone like me to know, all right, if we've got a bunch of people backing up, like, I know that's going to be more likely to have some kind of situation depending on the visiting team. And so it's a great opportunity to prevent that just from our side as well. And it strikes me that when we talked about this evolution of stadiums and what the offerings are, now that fans generally demand a higher level of food or beverage offering, that's going to increase those wait times because somebody's not just going and plucking a pretzel from the back and dishing it out. And that's going to increase just by definition the amount of wait time that everybody has to wait in there. So from what you guys have seen, like how are stadiums and the operations people, like how are they juggling that how do we meet the client demand with also like, hey, we've still got to be operationally efficient, get these people out?
Yeah. So, I mean, it all comes down to, you know, for us, it's a sales cycle, right? You know, it's a, you know, timeshare. Once you have timeshare, then you have mindshare. And then once you have mindshare, you have market share. And all of that comes from the top. So when I first started the company, I was cold calling CTOs and CIOs. And it was more of like, okay, thank you, Zach, for educating me on this system. We know that you exist. No, we're not going to move forward, but we know you exist maybe sometime in the future. Now, as time went on, you know, we're with, giants like Intel Corporation that are pushing us from the top, even to the level of consultancy level, like Deloitte, for example, when they're consulting with an owner on building a stadium, an arena, a live event space, they're telling the owner, okay, these are the things that you have to do, we as fans and as operators and as the world changes, these are expectations. These are building standards, right? And so, you know, that's where we shifted our focus to go in really at the top, you know, driven by Intel Corporation to say, okay, we're going to educate with the people that are at the very, very, very ground level of decision-making. And that perforates its way all throughout the organization to then ultimately, you know, the CTO, the CIO, but it starts months and months, if not years before that point in time. Yeah. So it allows us to get ahead of that. And so creating those operational efficiencies and things of that sort, we're not necessarily educating ourselves. Is we have, you know, these massive conglomerates like Intel that are educating, and it trickles down into the motion of, okay, yeah, we heard about wait time. This is a standard, and this is what we have. This is what the expectations are of fans and operators moving forward.
That makes complete sense. Do you guys see a difference from – or a higher demand in football stadiums versus basketball stadiums or smaller arenas versus larger arenas? Do you guys see any difference by type of venue, or is it all, you know, pretty common along the spectrum?
Yeah, the live event space is pretty, it's wildly differing, but it also has a lot of similarities. So whether you're an arena, you're a stadium, you're a ballpark, you have crowd flow issues. You're going to have lines everywhere, right? Now, the difference is, if you go to like the soccer, UF or the Premier League, for example, where we're in some Premier League stadiums, they have 15 minutes to make 90% of their F&B revenue.
Yeah.
And it becomes a madhouse, right? And so they have 15 minutes. So they like our system because, okay, it's not, okay, we have 15 minutes. Wait time is not applicable here. It's not, we have 15 minutes. Wait time is the most applicable here because we want to use our system to really maximize that 15 minutes of revenue capture. So that's, you know, kind of use case one with, soccer, right? Now, football is different. They have, obviously, they have four quarters. It's more of a constant flow of people. Where we see with football, we monitor gates, entry gates to get into the stadium. It starts even before people get into the stadium because people tailgate, they arbitrage entryways, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Where when it comes to revenue strategies, it all starts with where people will stand at certain gates to get into the stadium, if you can believe that. It comes from the four walls of the stadium. Beyond that, as opposed to NBA, they're constant. They're a 365 day a year venue. Miami Heat, one of our key NBA clients that signed on the dotted line years ago because they're so innovative and progressive, they said, hey, we have almost an event a day on average. We have like 360 events a year. We need this because every event is different. We want to distribute people more evenly across our concourse while giving them an unparalleled fan experience. Now, In conclusion, when it comes to baseball, as an example, the Dodgers are a client of ours. They use our technology, not from a redistribution of people. They use it internally to study the data and the analytics and the flow of people to optimize their revenue strategies. So they use it as almost a diagnostic tool as opposed to a guest tool. You can work, they can work in conjunction with each other, or you can use one or the other. And that's what took, you know, so long to really prove out, is to say, okay, one size doesn't fit all, but we have applicability in that one size model. It just depends on the business problem that you're trying to solve.
Yeah, it's funny because I would think a lot of people would probably think about what you guys are doing and say, well, we've got a smaller venue, so the crowds aren't as big.
Correct.
And it's not as
correct.
Big of a deal. But then it's also, all right, you've got a smaller number of potential clients that you can generate revenue on. You can't afford to miss out on that versus, you know, AT&T Stadium. If somebody decides to sit back down, they've still got, you know, 90,000 other people that they can make that money off of, which is interesting. It's correct. Funny, I remember when I think it's the Intuit Arena that'll be in LA and Inglewood for the Clippers, and it was one of Steve Ballmer's big things was he had to have as many bathrooms as possibly could fit in there because he didn't want anybody missing out on anything in the game or any potential concessions or anything like that. Are there anything that you guys have seen that, you know, we as just your average consumer wouldn't notice is going on that stadiums do to try and make sure that we've either got, you know, keep our butts in the seats or drive us towards concessions?
I mean, it's really the invisible, right? You know, the ghost in the wires is what I call it. There's so much that's happening on the back end. You know, when you go into an arena and you connect to Wi-Fi, boom, you're connected. You can, you know, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, right? That there's so much back-end information that a lot of consumers, and I quite frankly didn't know about when I first started. You know, there are massive data centers that could power almost a small city in arenas and stadiums. I mean, look at SoFi Stadium, for example. I mean, the amount of, you know, traffic they get on their network, they have to support that, right? And so I think I saw a stat where they could take, it was like 2 million selfies at the same point in time and upload on their network. It was like almost instantaneous. There was no, it was like a minimal upload time. And, I mean, that's incredible, right? So from the backend infrastructure, from the network side, you know, and Cisco does one hell of a job at this, excuse my French, where they're really the leaders in the world when it comes to the networking side, that allowed the 2 million selfie example to happen. You know, to the guest experience stuff. I mean, there's a lot of cool initiatives that are happening with, you know, Amazon Just Walk Out and different things like that, that there's so much that's happening in the background that no one knows about, that people are working tirelessly behind the scenes to make sure that when you and I go into a venue, you know, we can do anything we want and not miss, a second of action when it comes to connectivity. And so, I mean, yeah, you're 100% correct, but, and right where there's from the network to the guest experience side of the house to video surveillance and, you know, video management systems that are keeping us safe, you know, from an incident perspective, there's so much that's happening behind the scenes.
It's crazy to think about. I watched the time-lapse video on Vegas's arena being built. It's just crazy to think that can go from plans and to implementation actually being built with all the little things that have to go on in the background. What is, I know we're in a, it seems like we're in a pretty significantly different phase right now from a technology standpoint that we're kind of in the prime of whatever it is right now compared to where we were 10 years ago. But let's look out a little bit further. Is there something that you think is going to be the next frontier in stadium development, arena development?
Computer vision. I mean, you've heard about it. You probably just started to hear about it in the past 2 years, but computer vision. I mean, everything. Yeah. And we work, obviously, we're computer vision. We work with a lot of computer vision partners. And what computer vision does, it guarantees accuracy. It allows for things to happen, you know, instantaneously. There's precision. It's cost effective, and it's the future, really. And so there's so many different things that you can accomplish with computer vision. Obviously, wait time is one of them.
Can you real quick for the audience, can you talk about what computer vision is and define that a little more?
Yeah, absolutely. So Let's say you have cameras, right? Cameras see things. They have eyes. Now, if you have, for example, you probably have a Blink doorbell or some cameras at your house, and that's just a video stream, right? What computer vision does is it takes that video stream and it processes it on a server that's hosted on-prem or in the cloud. And in that process of processing that video stream, we call it RTSP, what it does is it's learning about different things that you have AI models trained to do. Like with wait time, we count people and monitor how long people are staying in lines for, how many people enter and exit environments with large quantities. So we look at pixels. Other computer vision companies look at, they look at from sentiment of, you know, a lot of facial recognition companies. There's so much that computer vision can do ethically that is basically taking a video stream, RTSP, and processing that on a compute, whether it be Cisco, Dell, Lenovo, et cetera, that analyze and to provide you feedback on what your computer vision model is trained to do. So there's a lot of things that it can do with what we call precision at high volumes of people.
Yeah. You mentioned it's the magic word ethically, which I think is what a lot of people will first think about when they hear, all right, well, we're always on camera, which I think everyone's more comfortable now with that thought, just knowing, it's like people that don't want to do the facial recognition on your iPhone, that in reality, right, all your information's out there. If somebody wants to get it, they can get it. But how do you guys, how do you guys, or how do the stadiums or the people that are actually using that information, how do you kind of ease the consumers or the concert goer, or the people that are at the stadium? How do you ease those concerns of, hey, we're using this to improve the experience and that's it?
Yeah. Great question. We get it asked all the time. And the good thing about what we're doing is we are completely anonymous with our tracking. We don't track Bluetooth or cell phones or Wi-Fi. That's all remedial and inaccurate. That's a thing of the past that never worked. We flipped the model on its head to say, we're going to use cameras. These are overhead cameras, so we only see the tops of people's heads. And we are monitoring the pixels. So technically speaking, we don't even know that what we're tracking are people. They're just this pixels on a moving plane. So we don't track faces. We don't track sentiment. We don't track colors, any object recognition. It's completely anonymized. So what that does is it creates comfortability. Once the client is educated, properly educated on the solution, they have no, issues or no, all of their concerns go out the window once they understand how the system works. A couple other things is we are GDPR compliant, so video privacy law compliant, PII compliant, and it's all just pixel tracking. So it's all just counting numbers. As an example, you're an X, I'm a Y. We don't know that you're AJ and I'm Zach. It's you're an X, I'm a Y. So it's all anonymous. And once a client or a partner or the general public is educated on that, then they go, oh, well, then it's really, truly just making my experience better. And so that's how we approach that subject.
Well, ultimately, I think if somebody either, you got to miss a game-winning goal or miss something or wait in a long line, I think most people would give up even some of their privacy just to avoid that kind of thing.
Right.
Just kind of overall the landscape of the stadium or arena market, what would you say right now, based on what they're saying or what you're seeing, what are a couple of the biggest challenges that they're facing right now?
Yeah, I mean, well, number one, we see it all the time. And, so this is obviously a selfish plug for us, but is distribution issues, right? Crowd distribution. A lot of these companies, they said, oh, we're going to try to do this ourselves, or this is not an issue for us in the past. But now moving forward to present day, it is an issue. They realize it. And now they're looking to technologically solve that problem. So crowd flow and crowd management is really paramount. And so we see it as a top priority across every single location that either reaches out to us or that we approach. So that's number one. Number two is connectivity. There's still companies and venues and stadiums and arenas that don't place an emphasis on connectivity. They don't see the ROI with Wi-Fi. They don't see the ROI with these different things. But that's obviously a huge push to just standardize that. And number three is and this is a personal thing with me, but I see it out there. There are so many foo-foo fan experience things that have no value into a venue. They have no value to a fan. It's a gimmicky thing. We saw a big bubble of it when I first started at, you know, when I first started Wait Time. There's a big bubble of all this gimmicky stuff that never worked. You know, that never worked at all. And so even operational technologies that came out, like, you know, order at your seat, never worked, never will work, because they don't understand the implications it has on back end operations to be able to order to your, to bring it to your seat. So what we see is, you know, connectivity, crowd management. There's a big influx of cameras that are going into these venues to solve business problems, not for surveillance purposes only. Mm-hmm. It's to solve business problems. And we see, you know, and a lot of that is really enabled by the computer vision AI boom that's happening right now. And so people can get much more accurate information when you actually deploy technology the right way. So that's what really where we see it out there.
Yeah. You just said something that it's thought, but didn't have anything to prove, but the order at your seat function, which to me, seemed like it first really started to come on the last 5 or so years. And it seems like every, at least most of the stadiums or arenas that I've been to have that option. I don't see people use it very often, but in my head, I always just thought about it as that seems like the least efficient use of your most valuable resource, which is an employee or a headcount.
Correct.
It can be doing something much more efficient. So from what you've seen, that's never been an effective. Is it just the demand hasn't been there, or operationally it hasn't been there?
I mean, both. We've done a lot of work with even some companies that are trying to do it, and you know, they're trying to look for a hook. They're looking for a hook of, okay, why are people going to use this? Okay, well, Wait Time, what if we pull your information in? They see that there's a long line. I'll order to my seat. You know, stuff like that, where in theory it made sense, but operationally, okay, you place an order to go. They have to receive the order. They have to make the order, and they have to deploy a person to bring your food and beverage out to your seat. What if when you get there, when they get there, you're not there, right? Mm-hmm. What happens? They have to pay that person, which takes away from their bottom line revenue to your capital expenditure to bring things out to you. Also, on the flip side, organizations want people to explore their venue, walk around our venue, go to merchandise. Did you know that there was a bodega across the way from your section? Go to that. That's probably one of the best foods in Miami. And so they want people to explore. They want people to see everything that they have to offer in a venue, which takes away from the sentiment of what we're talking about as well.
Yeah, makes sense. Who was, and we've talked a lot about what you guys do, which is really incredible technology and an incredible story of how it started. Who was, take us back a little bit towards the beginning. Who was the first big client, you know, the first big establishment that let you guys in the door, that was your kind of, man, we made it, we got something here moment?
Yeah, I would say Miami Heat. And, you know, we started off with a venue before that we kind of built things out of, which is the Palace of Auburn Hills. You know, eternally grateful for them. But the first real deal that we had was the Miami Heat. You know, Matthew Jafarian, who is the executive vice president over there, he put us in. He said, "Hey, Zach, we're gonna take a chance on you guys. We believe in the technology. We believe in you and your team. We're gonna take a chance on you and be your first, you know, client." They've been a client since 7 years now. You know, really from day one, almost 8 years, day one, where they said, "We need to be the first. We're the most progressive team in the NBA," which is proven, you know, in day in and day out with, you know, everything that they're doing in their organization.
Hashtag heat culture.
There we go. And, you know, they allowed us to really prove out the value. They wanted to be true partners with us, because you either get with a client that's true partners, they want to solve problems with you, or they're on the other side of the table to say, you know, hey, this didn't work, or, you know, they blame you for this, or whatever. They are the most progressive and collaborative client that allowed us to really take our technology to the next level.
That's awesome. And you said you guys do a couple Premier League stadiums too. Do you see any difference in, I don't know, psychology around this type of thing from the United States to to countries in Europe or over there? Or is everyone kind of approach this the same way? I guess another way to ask it, is there a different priority overseas with this kind of technology than there is in the US?
Yeah, I would say, they will always say, hey, you know, we're not as progressive as the US, but we're a little bit behind the US when it comes to technology. But honestly, they're very progressive. You know, we're in a couple of the stadiums there and they are progressive. They want to kind of get started to say, okay, we don't necessarily know the ROI that we're going to achieve. We don't know this. There's a lot of unknowns because it's a new technology, but we're going to put it in and we're going to prove it out. And so they're very innovative and they say that they're behind, but I really don't see it. We see a lot of influx of from France to the UK to really all across Europe when it comes to wait times value. So they're really not too far behind, but they say that they are, but they're really not. Some of our biggest clients in the UK have been the most progressive, like the National Exhibition Center in Birmingham, England, for example, one of the biggest exhibition centers in Europe. They're about 9 million square feet. They really helped improve our technology from a convention center and an exhibition center standpoint. So they are very progressive, but it really depends on what kind of technology they're implementing, right? Europe has a lot of video privacy laws when it comes to video cameras, surveillance. Mm-hmm. GDPR is a high priority for them to make sure that they hit, they say, hey, we are GDPR compliant. But if you deploy solutions that are GDPR compliant, but happen to involve a camera, but you do it going back to ethically, but also in the right way that it was designed to, then they can start to really glean a lot of business value out of the system. So it really depends to your question, but that's really my answer around that.
That's very cool. You've been super generous with your time, and this is such a fascinating topic. We could go forever, but I always like to finish up here with a segment that dubbed the Mount Rushmore segment. And so from your experience, it could be, and I know this could be a loaded question, so I don't want you to get in trouble with your customers, but
you're good.
The four coolest stadiums that you've been to, it could mean whatever you want it to mean, either ambiance or tradition or technology, anything like that. Go for it.
Well, number one, without a doubt, is Miami Heat, Kaseya Center. You know, I went from American Airlines Arena to FTX to now to Kaseya Center. I'm not sure if you've been to a Miami Heat game, but they have one of the most electric environments when it comes to their game day presentation. They have a nightclub in their arena. Obviously, you're in Miami, right? Like, you never know, who you're going to see there. Their entertainment level is unparalleled compared to other arenas I've been to. So I would say that's number one. Number two, Denver Broncos. They have a beautiful backdrop of their stadium. They're very progressive. They help to really, develop the analysis of wait time when it comes to their gate entryways. So they're very powerful in that sector. But then also let's fly to Australia for a second. The Melbourne Cricket Ground, one of our oldest clients. They're one of the biggest stadiums in the world. They can fit about 128,000 people in their stadium at one point in time. But, think about University of Michigan, the Big House. It's called the Big House because it's so big. You can put that in the middle of their stadium on their field. So it's incredible. And the sheer size and volume, it's beautiful. So I would say that's number three. And number four, I would say is Wimbledon. And that's not a stadium or an arena, but it's a venue, right? And when I went to Wimbledon, I mean, it's like the most prestigious. I feel like uncouth with just walking there because I'm not like royalty, right? But it's just like the most beautiful. You could sleep on the ground there. It's like so clean and pristine. So I would say that those all over the world, those are my four. That's my Mount Rushmore right there.
I love it. That's a great list. It was exactly what I was hoping for. I wanted to hope that we could get a couple kind of off the beaten path ones there, which we did. Exactly. So yeah. Well, Zach, I appreciate the time here. This has been super interesting, and you just bring such an incredible perspective. And I know people are going to get a lot out of this, is the way they think about this fan engagement, customer engagement, and the ways that you guys are bringing incredible value to these venues. And hope to have you on again in the future. You know, maybe as we get Yes, new big stadiums getting built or something like that, and come on and talk about it. Where can everybody find you? You got, you know, potential customers or anything like that out there? Where should they go to find you guys?
Yeah, so I mean, Miami Heat is obviously, as I talked about, Denver Broncos, the 49ers, Levi Stadium, Dodger Stadium, Melbourne Cricket Ground in Australia, Sydney Cricket Ground in Australia, Gardenia Park in Australia, Rukutan Eagles Ballpark, which is in Japan. A couple, you know, just as a short list, you know, right there.
Awesome. Well, Zach, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much, and look forward to talking to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.